I've been working with a nurse dietitian for the last 6 months, and it's been life-changing. I've lost weight, healed my relationship with food, and have way more energy. Working with a dietitian online to create a personalized nutrition plan was so easy thanks to Nourish. The best part? I pay $0 out of pocket because Nourish accepts hundreds of insurance plans. 94% of patients pay $0 out of pocket. Find your dietitian at usenourish.com. That's usenourish.com.
Moms, dads, are you the parent of a student athlete? Do you want to know how to get the most out of youth sports? If so, listen to the Next Pitch podcast to give you the tools to raise an aspiring athlete. It's not simple, but we talk straight and give you the best insight there is when it comes to youth sports. We'll cover everything from nutrition and training to mental toughness and teamwork. It's a podcast you can listen to together with your kids so everyone can benefit. Follow Next Pitch on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
President Trump has now implemented his sweeping tariff policies, and they're weighing heavily on financial markets. I'm Andy Gersher, and this is Game. So let's bring on Jim Welsh, macro strategist and portfolio manager at MacroTides.com in San Diego. Jim, always great to have you on the Gains podcast.
Always great to join you, Andy.
Yes, and you're joining us on so-called Liberation Day. We just heard from President Trump, 25% tariffs on all foreign cars, and then he's going to apply a reciprocal tariff, but half. So a country, if a country has a 50% tariff on U.S. goods, then the U.S. would charge a reciprocal of 25%. President Trump actually called that a kind reciprocal tariff. Sounds fair enough. And, you know, on the surface here, the U.S. is only charging half of what everybody else is charging us. That doesn't seem too extreme. One other thing before I have you kind of weigh in here, Jim, there is a, by the way, a 10% baseline across the board too, just to put that. But on Liberation Day here in the U.S.?
Well, my first comment would be is that some of this stuff is indeed justified because other countries have been levying taxes on U.S. exports for a very, very long time. My one criticism is that I think President Trump has not done a great job, and the Republican Party, of really communicating the tariffs that other countries have been putting on us and what that has meant for U.S. producers trying to export the stuff we make overseas. Because effectively, Andy, prices are going to be going up as these tariffs take effect. And, it's going to be painful for especially the bottom 50% of wage earners who are already struggling with the cost of living as it is. And so to me, I wish he had done a better job over the last month or so, communicating, making it clear some of the stuff that other countries have been doing, as opposed to just saying they've been ripping us off. So I think that's number one. And secondly, especially with our allies and, countries that have been friends for decades, my approach would have been, all right, let's talk about this stuff, and you got 60 days to correct it. And if you don't get it done in 60 days, this is what's going to happen. Teddy Roosevelt had speak softly and carry a big stick. And, what President Trump has decided to do is use the big stick first, as opposed to having, negotiations and conversations to try to accomplish what he's trying to do without the disruptions that I think are likely as other countries respond to his announcement today.
The one thing is, I'm never comfortable with a friend who is, on the other hand, just ripping me off. That's part of the, we have friends, and yes, they're friendly, but they're still ripping us off. And I think fair is fair. But you brought a good point up, and that is, regardless of how this kind of plays out, it is going to disrupt things. And that will end up being, even if this is a long-term benefit for the United States, manufacturing, that kind of thing, if that goal actually does get accomplished by these tactics, like you just alluded to, There's some rough going, and it does hit people on the lower end of the economy. So Main Street and Wall Street are two different animals, but it'll be interesting to see how Wall Street then takes this, this approach of going kind reciprocal tariff approach.
So what we've seen over the last 6 weeks, Andy, consistently is Wall Street and traders thinking that President Trump was only using the tariff threat as a negotiating ploy. And what I've written consistently is, no, he's serious about this. He's going to follow through. And you brought up sometimes there's a difference between Main Street and Wall Street. But there are times when Wall Street and Main Street run together. And that is when the economy slows materially and obviously when it goes into a recession. Historically, the average bear market is about 36% for the S&P when a recession has developed. So, I mean, I think those are the concerns that are going to continue to build. And the other thing, Andy, what is going to be very key is how do these other countries respond in the next few days? If they come back and say, okay, like poker, I'll call your, tariff and reciprocal tariffs, and I'm going to raise you X amount. And I think if that really happens, and some countries probably won't do that, other countries will. And obviously, if that includes the EU, Canada, Mexico, and of course, China, then you've got the prospect of a trade war.
But the one thing with this, though, Jim, I mean, I got to say, though, what, do we just sit here and take it and just get ripped off? Unfortunate thing. At some point, the United States is going to have to address these trade imbalances. I mean, this is a really big factor long term. We've even talked about debt, and we were concerned that no party was really addressing just the bloating government. We've seen that kind of being addressed with DOGE. Then you also have this. I mean, the one thing I find interesting is there's so many analysts that are just outraged. But what, do we just sit here and take it? And this is the first time anybody's ever pushed back a very long time on this. At some point, we're going to have to do it, right?
Again, it comes down to the process. Again, as I said at the beginning, educating people that Canada routinely charges 200% plus tariffs on our dairy products and a whole host of other products. To me, that is something that President Trump and everybody in the administration should be walking around with cue cards showing all these numbers. Now, during his presentation, he did show a couple of cue cards showing some of the numbers. But I really think, Andy, he's asking the American people to experience an increase in difficult times in terms of cost of living is going to go up. The stock market is down about 10%. It very well may declining another 10% or more. So my only point is I agree with you. At some point in time, you have to draw a line. There's always more than one way to do anything. And so my take would have been, guys, to our trading partners, you got 60 days. This is the bar you have to meet, or else this is what's going to happen. And so it's just the methodology and the way he's going about this. It's kind of like Musk with the Doge effort. Last year, most people don't know this, but the Government Accountability Office, the GAO, was founded in 1921. It's a nonpartisan entity, doesn't favor Republicans or Democrats. Their task is identify waste, fraud, graft and all the rest of that stuff. Or I can't remember, there's three things. But the point being is they came out with a report last April that said somewhere between $230 billion and $520 billion a year is lost to waste, fraud, and other inefficiencies. That's a lot of money. Someone in the government be going out and trying to find somewhere between $200 and $500 billion of waste and fraud? Absolutely. But the idea of Elon Musk standing on a stage and holding a chainsaw, to me, the optics, that's just stupid.
Right. I get the messaging. I get where you're at with the messaging. And that's one thing. This could play out multiple ways long term. But, as we get back to the markets, we talked several months ago, we were kind of ripe for a pullback to begin with. Yeah. So this might not just be the sole driver of that, though this is the headline. But where's the market right now technically?
Again, we threw a couple of years in 2023 and 24, Andy, where there really were reasons to sell. And yeah, there was a little blip with the banks in March of 23, the regional banks that went down. But, you know, that was quickly over. And so for the first time in really going back several years, reasons to sell show up. And the tariff is the point guard, if you will, on this. And the economic repercussions are another reason. And then we're going to see a pickup in inflation. So it raises questions about monetary policy. So all of a sudden we went from an environment with almost no reasons to ever sell to, well, you got multiple reasons to sell, and it's hard to find solid reasons near term to be a buyer. And when we spoke over the last 2-3 months, we talked about the advanced decline line. And I noted that going back to 1928, the advanced decline line is an ongoing running total of how many stocks are going up every day versus down. And when the market's healthy, the S&P goes up and makes higher highs, and the advanced decline line continues to go up right with it. So it's kind of like everybody's in agreement. What we saw is the advanced decline line peaked on November 29th. And in the last few months, we've seen the S&P work its way higher, and the advanced decline line has been fading. And every intermediate decline and major bear market since 1928 has been preceded by this kind of negative divergence. So that was the gist of our conversation, is that, hey, the market is vulnerable now to a decline of 7-10%. And it's just a question of whether a reason to sell materializes, which of course it has. And I thought it would, because I thought President Trump was very serious about this. So if we start to see knock-on effects on the economy 3-6 months from now, where, wait a second, things are slowing more materially, then I think the S&P could easily drop another 10-15%. So, you know, that was a great warning that the advanced decline line provided. And, you know, historically, it's been a warning that it paid to be diligent about.
Yeah, you know, the Dow theory is also bearish right now. It turned, like a month ago. So we're just kind of waiting to find levels, you know, for us on the Gains podcast who follow the Dow theory religiously. So do you kind of coincide with that? Do you see further downside?
Yeah. I mean, my take
to what degree?
Well, I think the S&P can drop to 5,100 to 5,200. And that's based on chart. If you look at the chart of the S&P, there's support in that range. In addition, the S&P fell from 6147 to 5504, so it fell 640 plus points. The high a few days ago was 5786. You subtract 640, and you get like 5120 or some number like that. So often when you see a big decline, and this works, you know, with rallies too, the first big move, whether it's up or down, you get a retracement, and then you get another move that's close to being equal to that first move. So I think potentially, if the economy shows more signs of wear and tear, Andy, I think that's another reason why the S&P can make a trip down there. And the other thing is the Federal Reserve is kind of stuck. We're going to see inflation tick higher. But I don't think they can move preemptively by lowering rates until the unemployment rate starts to tick higher. So if the unemployment rate gets above 4.5%, I think the Fed will indeed respond. But because of the outlook for inflation to be ticking higher over the next 3-6 months, it kind of keeps them at bay from responding proactively. And that, to me, is another negative for the economy, because as things start to show they're slowing, they're not going to respond immediately. And the unemployment rate is a lagging indicator. You know, if you're running a business, the last thing you want to do is let go of good people. So you'll bear with, gee, our sales are softer and softer. Oh, okay, I'm going to cut hours because I'm trying to retain my core employees. But finally, if the economy goes into recession, you know, you don't really have a choice. You're going to have to lay people off. So again, my point is the trigger for the Fed to respond is the unemployment rate, but by its nature, it is a lagging economic indicator, which means the Fed may be on hold for an extra month or two because of they're waiting for that. And while that's going on, the economy is even weakening more. So, you know, again, as I said, when there's no reasons to sell, the market trend is usually very positive. But when there are reasons to sell, that means there are also few reasons to be a buyer. And it's easy for a small increase of selling pressure then to overwhelm buyers. So I've been very cautious. I really thought President Trump was serious about this.
He said it all along on the campaign trail. Once he was elected, he kept saying, promises made, promises delivered. I don't think it should be a surprise here, but, you mentioned that Wall Street was kind of thinking, they weren't really believing him. Just kind of like they weren't really believing the Fed a couple of years ago. We can talk about that when we get back. We got to take a quick break. Hey, be sure to subscribe, follow, leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts if that's an option for you. I've been told that's podcast gold. Totally appreciate the solid there. And as always, subscribe and turn on those notifications so you know when a new Gains episode drops. We drop Gains episodes on Wednesdays. We'll be right back with Jim after the break. Back with Jim Welsh, macro strategist and portfolio manager at MacroTides.com in San Diego. Before we were heading into break, we were talking about the setup and just some of the back and forth here. You mentioned Fed policy and you see some weakness in the market. So I guess the big question here is, how do you play it all, Jim?
Treasury bonds. There's an ETF, TLT, that would gain in value if the economy slows, because treasury yields will come down, and as they come down, TLT will go up in value. And at some point in time, I think the Federal Reserve will be forced to start cutting rates, which should also be positive for the bond market. So to me, that's the one obvious play, because I think the economy is going to slow down almost no matter what. It's just the magnitude of the slowdown is unknown. Regarding the tariff stuff, this could be an issue that goes on for many months. It could be over in 3 weeks. There's just no way to know how other countries are going to respond.
And uncertainty, as we know, always adds to the volatility.
Yes. And the uncertainty, you think you're running a business and you're trying to figure out what's going to be happening. Well, given the level of uncertainty, your inclination is, I think I'm going to hold off on, buying that new machine. Or making other expenses. And maybe I'm not going to hire another employee right away and just see how things go. So you have this inertia that has already started to build up in the economy that is going to continue as long as the uncertainty remains. And the other thing, which is kind of weird, Andy, but a lot of people and companies, in anticipation of tariffs, bought stuff. So the trade deficit went from about $80 billion a month last October to $150 billion.
We saw that in cars. We're seeing people buying cars right now in full force, kind of anticipating some of what we're talking about today.
We're going to beat the price increase. Yeah. So, but think about the dynamics that are going on there. Effectively, demand, which would have maybe happened 3, 4, 6 months from now, is getting pulled forward as people say, I'm going to have to buy a car now before tariffs cause those prices to go up. Other companies, I'm going to import as much as I can so I have stuff on inventory and I'll be able to sell some of that stuff at a profit after tariffs go up. And so it creates a distortion where in the near term, it gives the economy a boost as people are responding to the prospect of tariffs. But once, they've done all that buying, there's going to be a gap where, all right, that future demand has already been satisfied. So we may see economic data points be okay for a little while. As you noted, car sales had a big lift, I think, for the month of March. But it just means that there's another dip coming as all that preemptive buying, it's not going to get repeated.
Yeah, you're pulling those
second quarter.
You're pulling that business, those sales forward. So you talked about back to playing this. So you mentioned TLT, build dry powder. Then what levels are you looking to as we wrap?
I think the S&P gets below 5,200. I mean, that's how, you know, I'm making a, hopefully an educated guess
right
today.
They're all guesses.
About that. But, you know, that to me, I think is a place where you get, if we get down there, that will probably be at least set up for a fairly decent trade.
What would you be buying at that level? Like, okay, so we see a pullback here. You've unloaded some stuff. You've made money on. You have some dry powder on the side. You've deployed some capital to TLT. When you start approaching those levels, what kind of things are you looking at?
Well, the things that have gotten hit the hardest during this decline are likely to bounce, fairly aggressively. So technology, you and I talked about this a lot at the beginning of the year in terms of how overweight everyone was in technology and how we were likely to see that get unwound. And that's exactly what's happened. The Mag 7 is down for the year. I think the average stock is about unchanged. And if we get to 5,200, those stocks are going to get beat up some more. Then they're going to, if we have a decent trading low, once we get down there, they're going to have a fairly significant snapback rally. And until proven otherwise, you know, my take is treat every rally as a tactical rally. In other words, buy, but be on the lookout for an exit point until we can have confidence that the economy is going to be okay. Because if the economy does indeed weaken, snapback rallies, they last for a while. They can be 15-20% in some cases, and then they roll over. I would urge people to take a look at the chart of the S&P from 2000 to 2002 and from 2007 to 2009. You'll see huge rallies that happen, only for them to reverse and for the S&P to drop to lower lows. So I think we're in that kind of environment, Andy, until we can have confidence that the economy isn't going into a recession. I think the odds are increasing that we're going to have a fairly significant slowdown. And I think ultimately we will have the recession.
All right, we'll keep an eye on that. Big thanks to Jim Welsh, macro strategist and portfolio manager at MacroTides.com in San Diego. Hey, be sure to subscribe, follow, leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. If that's an option for you, I've been told that's podcast gold. I totally appreciate the solid there. And as always, subscribe and turn on those notifications so you know when a new Gains episode drops. We drop Gains episodes on Wednesdays, and I look forward to seeing you then.
A News Radio WBBM podcast, powered by Odyssey.